Imagine becoming European champions at 12 years old. You remember Scotland's last 10-0 win and is a team from Fife heading to Africa. Find out on this week's episode of the Youth Football Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Youth Football Podcast. I am Adam Binney, joined by my co-host, as ever, Robbie McDonald, and two very special guest reporters today, Anya, and a debut for young Kane Maxwell. Robbie, let's start with yourself. Now, I noticed something on another podcast that you contribute to, the Staggies View podcast, a post made on there. Twitter and Instagram accounts. I would like to have this addressed and cleared up. Can you please let everyone know what a Barbie bomb is and what relevance that has to Ross County Football Club?
Barbie bomb. A Barbie bomb's a lovely creation, a nice little drink. It's become a bit of a pre-match ritual for some of our counties, our fellow county supporters, just to really refresh ourselves before kickoff.
Barbie bomb. Was this conceived during the whole Barbieheimer craze late last year?
No, it wasn't.
Did you name it, or was this an existing beverage?
No, this is existing. I think this is quite a common thing
in
the Highlands and the Lowlands.
But what relevance does it have to Ross County?
I don't know. It's just quite fun. It's just a nice pink drink. Gets you up for the game. There's no real relevance to Ross County, just other than the fact that it's become a bit of a tradition.
Oh, right. I'll give you that. Anyway, time to introduce our two guest reporters today. Anya, you're becoming a bit of a stalwart on the Youth Football Podcast. I hope you have some exciting tales to tell us of how you were nearly lost or nearly turned up to the wrong ground or something today, or has it all been plain sailing for you?
It went very smoothly, actually, this weekend, which was good. We was so lucky to get away with not being caught in the storm, though. That was the only thing. It was like about 70 minutes into the game and it was nice, and then the wind started picking up and I didn't think I'd make it through the post-match interviews without my tripod blown away, but managed to get there.
Brilliant. Kane, it's a debut on the podcast. How are you feeling? Is it nervous? Is it excitement?
Do you know what, I think I was listening to one of them on Spotify, because I went onto the website. And
just thought, we had to put you through that.
Yeah, no, I thought, right, just get a gist, and they're just talking about, obviously, the classic curtains and all that. Still a style.
Superb.
One going on, but yeah, quite happy to be on.
Can I ask, how old are you?
16.
16, okay, so you were born in, what, 2007, 2008?
Early to, I lagged for it all the time, youngest in the year, well, near enough.
Okay, so what I want to know is, it's around about the time you were conceived, Kane was in his prime in WWE. Is your dad a wrestling man?
No.
That's devastating. This is the point where you tell me you've got a brother called The Undertaker, though, no?
I do have a brother. His name is not Undertaker.
It's brutal. I had to get that in there.
Yeah.
What's your earliest football memory?
Me?
Oh, this is going to be awful. This is going to be something that happened last week.
probably going to watch Leicester v Charlton in the Championship when I stayed down in Leicester. That was, God knows how many years ago. It was 3-0. I remember that. I couldn't have been any older than 7, but that was my first ever football game.
Here's what was the first Scotland game that you remember?
First Scotland game that I remember would be, as in, I went to or just watched?
Either went to or watched, just kind of like, what's your first kind of Scotland game memory?
I didn't really watch many Scotland games up until that famous David Marshall moment.
No way, that's your first memory.
I remember the whole street, and because everyone had it on at the time, and the bedroom window was open, and I heard the whole street at the same time. Ron, when he saved that penalty, and it just sort of gave me good. My heart was beating at my chest. Wow, What a game that was, by the way.
That makes me feel really old, you know. That's incredible. Robbie, what was your first Scottish football memory or Scotland memory?
My first Scottish football memory was County getting to the cup final in 2010. Yeah. So I think I would have been 7 at that point. Mm-hmm. And first Scotland memory would have been that campaign, like, you know, the 2012 Euros campaign with Craig Levein at the helm, 4-6-0 against Czech Republic. We drew 2-2 with Czech Republic. One of their players dived in the box.
I think that was my first campaign. The first game I remember going to, I'm sure we played Czech Republic. It was 1-0, Scott Brown scored at Hampden. Or was that Croatia, maybe?
Maybe Croatia, that one, I think.
I can't remember, but it was definitely a friendly, I think.
Yeah.
Friendly, that probably would have been about 2008, 2009, round about that time. Anya, first Scottish football memory or Scotland memory?
My first Scottish football memory would have been... I don't know, it's hard, because I really wasn't into football until like 4 years, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe. But my first, I remember going to... Ibrox when Rangers won the league with Walter Smith, remember, because my mum still had her season ticket with them, so we went and I remember going to that. Probably didn't actually go and watch a game of football until like 2016-15 maybe. But that's terrible. I'm almost 21 and my first Scotland memory is probably the same as Kane's. Like, I don't
come on. Don't. This is you know what this is, Robbie? This is just a pair of glory hunters. Nothing to do with age. It's just glory hunters.
We went through
exactly. Where were you in Kazakhstan? Disgraceful. Right. Speaking of the national team. I think we're going back to the days of Kazakhstan and Georgia with the 1-0 defeat to Northern Ireland. Robbie, imagine playing for the men's A team in an international game and losing to Northern Ireland. It could never be me.
I know that for sure. What was your score when you played Northern Ireland?
We lost 2-1, so at least we scored.
Oh, okay. So you're not much better than any of the A-team then?
Nah, not at all, mate. Not at all.
What did you make of that one, though? I think it's a bit more worrying than the Holland game, eh?
Oh, it was grim. It looked like we could have played them for weeks without scoring. It was terrible. It was I forgot how terrible Hampden is. So I got a ticket... like kind of almost next to Northern Ireland fans. It's for the first time in a while I'd been at Hampden and been behind one of the goals. Usually when I'm at Hampden, sitting in the main stand, because I got a late ticket behind the goals and what you'd probably call the traditional Rangers end of the stadium. And I should have brought my specs, couldn't see. But that was the best thing about it. The best thing about the game is that I couldn't see it.
I think it was really it wasn't really a game that you wanted to see. But the worst thing about it was we recorded the podcast right before the game, and we were saying how we were going to pump them. And then by the time the podcast came out, we had been beaten 1-0.
That doesn't sound like us. That's not something you would say.
Never. No arrogance in this podcast.
Yeah, you mentioned Patterson there. I'm confident he can turn it around. We all know that. How good a player he is. You don't get to Everton without, you know, being a top player. A real shame for him. He'll know himself he didn't have his best game at all. But he has shown in the past, particularly in his early Scotland career, that he can be an exciting forward. He's just probably suffering from a lack of confidence, which comes as a result of a lack of game time down at Everton, who are in a really tricky position. Also docked another 2 points today. That was interesting. Anyway, if you thought that was bad, dear me. The Scotland women's performance on Friday. Women's national team. I thought we're going to make up for the shortcomings of the men the last few weeks, but I was subjected to watch that 90 minutes of the game in Serbia. And dearie me, Robbie, it was terrible.
wasn't one for the neutral, was it? Let alone one for the Scotland fan. I just think.
Yeah, there was what, about three attempts the whole game from Scotland against a side that we, you know, we should be beating. And of course, we're not going to be too critical of anyone in this podcast, but it baffles me that the manager was given the contract renewal at the time that he did, and that, you know, he's coming out after the game and saying, yeah, it's a clean sheet and a point against our toughest opponent in the group and all of this. I just think the standards need to be higher. You've got world-class players in there like Erin Cuthbert, who you saw captain Chelsea the week before in the Champions League quarter-final and get player of the match against Ajax, clearly one of the best midfielders in the world, and, you know, not a week later playing in a midfield for Scotland who just look completely devoid of ideas against a Serbia team who, you know, apart from the striker, are a team of nobodies. I was really, really disappointed.
Yeah, there's plenty of players littered throughout that squad playing at top, top levels. There's a lot of players in the English Premier League. Kirsty Smith, of course, won her 50th cap. There's those players you feel like should be getting results against teams like Serbia. I think after the disappointment of the last campaign losing to Ireland, yeah, you think the gaffers maybe he's going to have to pick it up the next few games, huh?
Yeah, he's under pressure. And yeah, I think it's been 8 or 9 competitive games now without a win for Scotland. Haven't won a competitive match since October 2022. Are you worried?
I think it's hard to look at those stats and not be worried. I think when you're coming off that long without a win, I think there's still stuff they can take from it as such. I think they still showed character. And, you know, they'll know themselves. They'll be really disappointed themselves, and they'll know that they need to step up from here, to be honest.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can sort that out tonight when we take on Slovakia. Tomorrow night, sorry. I'm not sure when this go out. Probably will have played Slovakia by that point. Robbie, we need to give a congratulations to week 2 winners, Stenhouse Muir, my local club from where I grew up. A few young boys in the squad.
Did you get any joy out of your local club winning the league?
I did. It was nice. I know a lot of guys I went to school with that are Stenhouse Muir supporters, but I was more buzzing for Angus Blacklock, to be honest. I think seeing his cheery face with his hands, well, he's not got his hands in the trophy yet, but I dare say that will be a profile picture to come soon. And we'll absolutely, I think we're going to try and get Angus on the podcast today, but I think he's still hungover from the celebrations on Saturday. But hopefully we can get him on and he can tell us some tales of Stenny's famous title win. I believe their first ever title win in the club's history.
Yeah, and they've got a good amount of young players littered throughout that squad as well. Well, Kinley Billam, he was their 21-year-old left back. He came through the exit trials after being at Ayr United. So that's a player who's kind of might have seen his career going on a bit of a downturn, but managed to earn himself a contract and get himself a league title. Ross Taylor, he's a winger. He was at Auchinleck Talbot last year, so he's really made the step up into the SPFL. Now they've also got a 21-year-old called Matty Yates, who's been there
player
for
2 years
after Sanyar. Ah, he's a brilliant striker.
Yeah, I remember watching Matty when he was a young player. He played at Rangers and then played at Hibs, and I remember him playing against Liverpool for the under-20s in a game at Ibrox against the Liverpool team that I believe included Curtis Jones and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And that was his first, I think he was only maybe 15 or 16 at the time. So he was a bit younger than a lot of the boys because it was an international week. So a lot of the boys that were playing for Rangers 20s at the time were all out on international duties for various age groups. So he was a young kid then, striker, and I thought he looked a really good player. Thought he was one that would maybe, you know, go on and do better things at Rangers and Hibs. But glad to see him doing well. He's been a real standout, you know, amongst some top players in League Two. I think he's probably been the best.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. I can see him. I think he's probably a shoo-in to at least get a nomination for that League Two Player of the Year. But definitely. Yeah, just a big congratulations to Stenhouse Muir from all of us, and especially to Angus Blacklock, who I'm sure will take a lot of personal credit for this achievement.
Not for his pint boring, anyway. If you're familiar with the Stenismuir socials, you know exactly what we're talking about. Big shout out to James Berry as well, Stenismuir player, centre midfielder. He was the captain of Stirling Uni when I played at Strathclyde Uni, and he taught me a couple of lessons on the pitch beforehand. Is lucky enough when they played Dundee United last year to spend a day with James for a special feature piece that I did working for PLZ Soccer. He's a lovely guy, really, really good player. So glad to see that he's going to get his hands on some silverware in his first full season, I believe, in professional football. So well done to James. Okay, we've spoken quite a lot about Scotland already, Robbie. Been a terrible time for the men's and women's senior sides. Please tell me you've got some good news, for the youth teams.
Got some brilliant news today. The Scotland women's under-19s have had a class start to their qualifying campaign. Won 2 out of 2 so far in the group, starting with a massive 10-0 win over Liechtenstein. Can you remember a time when Scotland have scored 10 goals at them?
Absolutely not. Yeah, not even at youth level. Can't remember the last. There will have been one. Can't remember the last one. Me and McCauley, I've seen the notes scored there. That to me is mental that she's only playing for the 19s. I thought she'd at least be 21s for the women's side, given how well she's been playing for Rangers this season. But fair enough.
Yeah, she's been absolutely brilliant for Rangers. I think that of course she's got the chance to progress up the ranks, and I'm sure she will sooner rather than later. But as long as she's turning out for one of the Scotland youth teams and getting herself on the score sheet, I'm sure it's only a matter of time before she gets her opportunity in the 21s. There's two hat tricks in that game as well from Tari Mitchell and Lisa Forrest, which is, again, pretty unheard of. I can't even think of a time where two senior players have got two hat tricks in a game.
I know, and I believe, I think Tari Burchill is the daughter of Mark Burchill. He used to play for Celtic and Livy early 2000s. I believe it is. I remember it. His son used to play against my brother, so I'm sure that's his daughter, Tari Burchill, top player. But two hat-tricks in one game is mental.
Has Lisa Forrest got any relation to James?
Not that I'm aware of, but quite possibly. Not that I'm aware of, though.
Jodie McCleary as well got two for herself, and then Rachel Murchie finally got that 10th goal in injury time to take it into double figures. So that was, a brilliant start. You couldn't really get better than that, but they did manage to follow up with another win, 2-0 against Cyprus yesterday, I think that game was. So two from two, you can't really complain with that, can you?
Yeah. Kane, we'll ask you about this, but before we ask you about this, we need to know your history in football. We've caned everyone on everyone on this podcast for their footballing abilities. Maybe outside of Jack Gilmore, it's been a pretty poor standard of football that's come through the ranks as part of the YFS media team. Kane, please tell us you've won something or played boys' club football at least to some sort of level, unlike the rest of us.
Down in England, part of the school football team, we done well in a few competitions. Unfortunately, didn't get any hands-on silverware, but I've got a stupid medal that still somehow sits in my drawer. Little trophy on it, didn't symbolise anything. also did play within grassroots. I played with Clarkston Colts. That was a short time, and that was what ended my football career, I would say.
So in 10 years time, we can expect to see yourself in a corner drinking a solemn pint around about 10 years time in Clarks and telling everyone, if it wasn't for the elbow injury, that you could have made it.
No. Yeah, any ambitions to go professional. Always enjoyed playing football, still do. Just go out for a little kick about, obviously. I don't think there's any sort of ambitions for me going professional. Nowhere near the level anyway.
Well, you'll definitely fit in here. That's for sure. Robbie, some more action in the Bob Docherty Cup, I believe. Scottish Schools, that's the time of year in action.
Indeed. We touched on the first game in the tournament last week when they lost 2-1 to get 2-1 to the Republic of Ireland. But luckily for them, they bounced back with a brilliant 2-1 win over Northern Ireland, bettering the men's first team, thank goodness. Northern Ireland an early lead through Ruby Adair, but Iona Watt of Meldrum Academy found herself in space at the edge of the box and finished into the bottom left corner to get the scores level. Iona's been a player that I've seen throughout this tournament just been mentioned again and again by our reporters for how good she's played. She's got a couple of star players from Callum Gibson and Daniel Guilfoyle, I think.
Oh, she's got one from Daniel. She must be a proper player then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a seal of approval.
He only gives high praise to the
best. Did I see some sort of comment in the group chat the other day that Daniel might have repeated a famous incident at some point?
I think that might have been the case. He was down at the UK Cup, was he?
Yeah, I believe he's interviewed someone at halftime again.
What an absolute shambles of a boy. We'll need to get him on in the next couple of weeks to give us a full rundown of that story, but it's not something that you're not going to believe, is it? He's got a past for it.
Absolutely, mate.
But yeah, I think Iona Watt, she plays for the Aberdeen under-18s ladies team and also for the Newmarket United Boys Club. So we were talking about that last time with some of these players are getting a look in at boys club level and reckon that's probably good for their development, and it's certainly showing for her. She's been brilliant that week.
Definitely. Yeah, doing incredibly well. And then in the final game, a 1-0 draw with England, I believe. Scotland scored instantly through Orla Byrne of Queensferry High School. She fired it past English goalkeeper to open the scoring. Didn't last long, I'm afraid, though. England pegged Scotland back almost immediately afterwards. Their captain, Emily Giddings, managed to poke it round the Scottish goalkeeper, making it 1-1. It was 2 goals after 5 minutes, and everyone probably thought that was going to be a goal fest, but no, it wasn't to be the case, and there were no more. But as we touched on in that game, Robbie, the star player went to Iona Watt, awarded by Daniel Guilfoyle. If you want to read a bit more about all three games and head over to the YFS website, you can read articles from Logan Back, Callum Gibson, and the famous man himself, Daniel Guilfoyle. Scotland women's under-16s are playing in Switzerland. Sorry, they're not playing in Switzerland. They're playing in Falkirk, but they're playing against Switzerland. That's a shame. Imagine being told that.
Poor girls having to spend time in that part of the world.
I know. That's a real shame. And if you look in that squad, interestingly, Orla Byrne, who opened the scoring against England in the Scottish Schools team, is also in this team. She plays her football for Hearts. This is a squad that we've looked at a number of times before. Of course, Olivia McStay plays there, related to, what was she, the niece or the granddaughter of Paul McStay? So someone got in touch and was able to clarify it for us. I love this squad. You've got Alba Stewart with the best name ever for a Scottish player, the young Rangers kid. Braylon Galt, who plays for Chicago Inter. It's amazing. And then, of course, we've got the set of twins as well, Erin and Jessica Husband, both at Hearts, but they play in the first team now. And of course, their brother Callum Husband has been lucky enough to grace a futsal court on the same team as myself, probably. So that's all that matters there. Sophie Black at Rangers, I've interviewed her before, fantastic player. And as we've said before, Chloe Arafatwood of none other, Robbie, than
Barcelona.
Incredible. That's got to be my favourite squad. Every time it comes out, the Scotland women's 16 is incredible, eh?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's just littered with talent. You mentioned the husband sisters there. They have both just signed professional contracts at Hearts until, I think, 2027. So that's they've both played for the first team, but that's really the start of their professional careers getting right underway. And I think at such a young age, there's so much potential for some of these players, isn't there?
Yeah, and they are top young players. So fair play to them. Right, let's get into the reason why Anya and Kane are here in the first place. Both had games at the weekend to report on for us. Kane, the floor is yours. Tell us all about it. You were in attendance at Bells of Athletic Yellow versus Blantyre Boys Club in the under-16 Central Lanarkshire Youth Football Association A Division. Let's hear it. What happened, Kane?
It was a brilliant start off with, I think there was, 8 goals. And it was honestly such a fast-paced game. I was trying to keep up with everything that was going on. Honestly, from individuals, we've seen goals from, Zach McGoldrick, who ended up scoring 5 in the end, which was pretty impressive. His hat-trick came after just 30 minutes. Blantyre had gone in to the game, having only lost one league game so far. So I think, although, you never like to predict a match, there was probably some favour heading towards their direction, but I think the wind definitely affected them. It was absolutely mental. It was blowing me about. My pod must have felt a good 4 or 5 gave up on it eventually. I'm sort of in a state of death because it was just wouldn't hold up. And then I'd keep my foot on the tripod.
Kane was actually doing his game from Dens Park.
Yeah, there was plenty of action in the game as well. In some red cards being flown away. Well, I say red cards, I mean card, which was shown to one of the Bells Hill coaches for the Dent. I believe he wore it, the referee. I think I was speaking to him, obviously, as he was making his way, and he told me why he was off. There was, as I said, some great single displays. Bells Hill's Aidan Ward, he put up a very strong defensive display. Of course, unfortunately, the scoreline didn't portray that, but I thought individually he was fantastic. He shown willingness to attack despite going behind. But also, Blantyre's Paul Creaney, he was absolutely fantastic when he came on. I think he started on the bench, but he did get subbed on rather early due to an injury. But he came on, showed brilliant defensive displays again, tracking back. He was a great passer, and it's just the play was pretty spot on. Overall, yeah, the game affecting the league wise, I think it extend, not extend, but Blantyre remain top of the league. Of course, they hoping to go on and win that, because if they win the next game in hand against Holly. It's not against Holly Town Colts. Not sure who it's against, actually. I'd need to check that one. But if they do win it, that puts them 10 points clear of Holly Town Colts, who are up 30 points at the moment.
It's now your turn. You had a game that somehow avoided the storm over the weekend, and your tripod was intact. So you can tell us all about what happened.
Yeah, so West Park United Sky took the win with a 5-0 win. That's adding another 5 goals to their 121 goals of the season so far already. Adding another 3 points to their 54 points that they were on before the game. So they were sitting 14 points clear of Dunne Pace FC in second. Don't know if they had a game at the weekend, don't know how they got on. Bridgend sitting third on 37 points still after the result at the weekend, which is quite a tight battle in the table between third, fourth and fifth. But it was a really good game at the weekend, 5 excellent goals. Surprised that Bridgend didn't get one. Ryan McLaughlin had his fair share of attempts, but West Park United Sky keeper did really well at keeping a clean sheet. So I think Aaron Musler, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he had an excellent game. He had a free kick as well, which was absolutely superb, just right over the wall, straight into the back of the net. And the last goal for Fessie Hatson came just after the 58th minute, and he just the defence had no chance really. He dribbled the ball past them and managed to take up a really powerful shot that ended up in the back of the net, and that was the fifth goal. Of course, all the other goals were excellent as well. And I think the boys were buzzing at the end of it too. So it was a really good game of football. A lot for. And then, of course, West Park are on an unbeaten run as well. That's them won 19 out of their 19 games so far this season. So another thing to be really proud of. Bridgend, I think, were excellent as well. They displayed some, I think, the big thing as well, their defending was absolutely amazing. West Park were unlucky not to get a sixth because it was cleared off the line twice, and then the third shot also went over the bar, but that was some great defending from Bridgend as well. So, yeah, an interesting, it'll be interesting to see if West Park can keep their winning run going, and hopefully Bridgend can find themselves back to their winning ways and make it up a bit further up the table.
Now, Robbie, you've had the pleasure this week of following some teams who were at the Holland Easter Open. What can you tell us?
I have indeed. YFS falls five teams who took the trip over to Holland with Transworld Soccer to take part in the Easter Open. So it was a fantastic tournament. There were so many teams involved from all over Europe. There was teams from Scotland, England, Wales and Ireland, of course, but there was also teams from Scandinavian countries like Denmark and Norway. There was loads and loads from places like Holland and Germany. So we took up the opportunity to follow West Scotland Football Association, Spartans, North Berwick, Rossvale and Lorcal Thistle across the weekend. We ran a few live blogs on their attempts, so if anyone wants to check that out, you can go over to yfsmedia.net where you can really see how their weekend progressed, not just on the pitch but off the pitch for these boys. And we would just like to give a massive congratulations to North Berwick under-13s, who represented Scotland brilliantly, winning their section of the tournament. So, already some European champions at 12 years old, Adam.
That's incredible. Yeah, fair play to them. That's impressive. Good on them. Speaking of performing well internationally, that leads us on nicely to our next section and our special guest this weekend, Lee Robertson and Ian Young from Rothes Juniors Football Club, who have a rather exciting mission, shall we say, coming up, Robbie?
They do indeed.
So, delighted to say we are joined by two very special guests, Lee Robertson and Ian Young from Rothes Juniors Football Club, who have a very exciting story to tell us about a little fundraiser they're doing. That's right, Robbie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. A really exciting trip planned. Lee, do you want to tell us where you're going and what brought this idea about?
So on the 18th of April, we'll be flying out to Malawi. Came together with the local church on a community basis on how we could help people here in Glenrothes and Fife. Which then led to us, you know, being informed that they had a partnership in Malawi. Intentionally was to send out clothing and equipment as things sort of progressed. And so did the idea of that, and long story short, we're now members of the trip.
Brilliant. Ian, just
wait, there's no plans from yourself to run the length of Africa while you're there, no?
No chance. Fair play to them, didn't they?
Ian, what's the kind of work that you've been doing in the local community? Obviously, right now we're trying to get fundraising for this big trip to Malawi, but what's the kind of local stuff that you've been doing up until this point?
Yeah, to be honest with you, so I coached the 2011s at Rothes Juniors, and I think the big part for us was that we could play a big part in the community. So first thing it kind of kicked off was I started doing a Christmas toy appeal for the hospital at the Vic. And we'd done that from the 2011 age group, but then we expanded it at club level, and we've done it for the past few years now, and that Christmas toy appeal just keeps getting bigger and bigger with donations and stuff, and so we've built a really good relationship with the hospital. We also we've got a relationship with the food bank in Glenrothes, so we've done a lot of things with the food bank there also, and we've done a massive fun day to celebrate our anniversary, so we've got for the festival. We had Raith Rovers manager Ian Murray along when he first joined the club. And again, we built just a really good relationship with Raith Rovers, and we've taken the kids along to like three Rovers football games. So every kid in the club, we've taken along, everybody's been paid for to get in, food supplied for, everything like that. Not only do we do, we look after our players when we've taken them, like, I don't know, we've bowling days, we've had like go-karting, we try and look after our players as much as we can, and making it financially able for kids to enjoy football, to be honest with you, and just that social aspect as well. But obviously doing a lot of fundraising along the way, and just spreading that good cause, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Ian, it looks like your club are right at the heart of everything good that's, you know, part of this community. How important would you say that football clubs are, not just in Glenrothes, but in Scotland as a whole, of playing a part of being a real driver behind, you know, community projects and being a positive force for the community when, you know, people of this country have been through so much over the last 3 years, you know, really since COVID and the cost of living crisis and all the rest of it. We always have these brilliant stories every week of football clubs being, you know, real part of that. How involved with your own community do you feel, not just for your own players, but for the community of Glenrothes and Fife as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely massive. My kids have been there since soccer school, and they've built so much strong friendships. I stay in Kinghorn, but I travel about 25 minutes to Glenrothes to get there. And it's so easy for me to join a local club, but they've built friendships. I've built friendships with other coaches. And we've had these kids and seen them transition from kids into high school. So not only is it like a safe zone for them to come, but to learn these social skills also around respect and actually not just on the park but off the park as well, to just have those values. And that's something we try and install as a club and as a coach as our kids. But I think it's so important as you say to expand that, so they can see where they get involved in going to the hospital and giving presents to the kids, and they get to feel that value and that empowerment to give back something back. And I think that's key for all clubs, not just in our community but across Scotland. I've got a lot of friends who coach up in Dundee, are heavily involved with Maryfield United, Dundee West, and I speak to them about what they do in the community. So it's great to see that a lot of clubs are on the same wavelength to kind of just want to give back, because even though we've got our monthly fees, etc., and our monthly fees are absolutely brilliant, where if you've got a second kid, you get the second kid like free or half price. And we, during COVID, we kind of stopped our payments and stuff like that as well, because we knew how valuable it is just to keep kids playing football, but obviously to have that relationship with the parents also. So I think it's absolutely massive, not only to have that in-club relationship, but if you could expand that in your community and out with even further, just like Africa, I think it's huge.
Yeah, not everyone volunteers their time to go over and work in Malawi. Why are you doing it? What is it that really makes you want to be a part of this?
I think I just kind of echo what Ian had said about coaching, you know, and the rewards, and, you know, it goes far beyond sort of football in the sense of giving back. One of the sort of charitable gestures that was recently started is a football boot bank. So essentially boots that were no longer required, but not quite ready to be discarded, and it was trying to create a no shame culture around that. And you mentioned earlier about sort of cost of living crisis and so on, so it was aimed at that, and, you know, that took off really, really well within the community. And the idea to encourage more kids to get playing football without the added pressure to mums, dads and carers for the expenses of the football boots. So in terms of equipment itself, you know, we were in a position where we had equipment to take over there, and, you know, it's cliche to say it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, and I really hope it's not. You know, I hope it's the start of many. But from the local community and the partnership that's already existing within Malawi, I think that certainly Ian and I, the club itself, has a lot to give, but also to get back, you know, in different concepts. I don't think, you know, for our kids here and for ourselves, and you know, for it's a different world altogether, really. Different cultural differences, and yeah. So it's hard to put in so few words, but it's like the sense of reward, and you know, and what you'll get back from the trip as a whole, and what's to be gained.
Ian, can you give us some insight into what the village that you're going to in Malawi is really like, and what life is like for the people who live there?
Well, I mean, Lee's shared a few things with me over the past couple of weeks of kind of families we'll be visiting across there. And to be fair, I mean, I think it's going to be a massive, I can't say a wake-up call for us, but a realisation of kind of how lucky we've got it and our boys have got it to be able to come to training on a Tuesday, come to training on a Thursday, play football on a Saturday or a Sunday and go home to a safe environment with maybe a house, a roof over their head, etc. And we do have our struggles across here. There's no doubt that families and poverty, etc. and what we've got in our country. But I don't think it'll be anywhere near of what we just kind of, the realisation that's going to be when we hit there. So obviously we're going to be staying with a couple of families out there. Me and Lee have offered to kind of stay in the village for one night, just to kind of, so we kind of feel real what it is with the family. And it's a kind of an honour to do that. So we're kind of looking forward to that. But some of the stuff we're seeing, even with just kind of the housing and the building, the foundation of the house is falling down, or the farm crops being damaged because the cyclones, etc. So I think if we can go across there and just, you want to try and give them everything, but you're not going to insult them at the same time, because there's that, you've got to kind of find that line of not just giving, but the actual of them being able to fend for themselves also. But just for the pictures, some of the pictures we're receiving in that, I think I've got three boys. So I've got three boys, and I just think it's going to make me realise, just not just as a coach, but as a father also. I think it's going to change my whole perception on a lot of things in life.
Yeah, Lee, what specifically is the money that you're fundraising going towards, and what's the kind of things that you're hoping to take over to these people?
One of the things with the village in particular, so the village itself that we're attending is Chulo Chisima. So they don't actually have any running water or electricity, and it is very rural. You know, it's difficult to summarise, you know, and there are some videos we've received and photographs, but the money itself, you know, the club, we're really grateful the club were in a position to pay for our flights. But the fundraising, obviously needed relevant vaccinations and sort of medication to go across. We've purchased all the football strips, tops, toys, sanitary products, clothing, school wear for their. We spoke to the equivalent of a PE teacher at the local secondary school. So apparently netball is also quite a big sport in Malawi. And that's been taken off, but again, there's a shortage of material, so we've just recently purchased some netball kits and netball balls to take over as well. So the fundraising itself was to, you know, the cost of living there, you know, whilst we're there, the stay itself, it was part self-funded, part charitable. You know, it's non-profit. I think we'll gain enough just by going, you know. But no, there's a few expenses involved to get us to the other side of the world. So it was just to aid with that, essentially. And the more we have, the more we can give to the likes of the community that we're going to and visiting there. But yeah, it's amazing what they don't have. So,
yeah. Ian, how can listeners that are hearing this just now get involved with your campaign and you know, donate? Is there any way that people can get involved to try and aid this campaign?
Yeah, of course. We've got a Just Giving page where we've had so much kindness from people out there, friends, family, and people we've shared the link also with fundraising. So the Just Giving page is the main source of our kind of raising money, to be honest with you, for the cause. So again, yeah, like Lee said, a lot of stuff we've had to source ourselves to get across there, but obviously when we're there also, And we've got a link. We've done a link. We've got a LinkedIn page. We're going to put stuff on Twitter tonight, Instagram, our socials, etc. Just to kind of give it one last push and kind try and pull in a few favours from a few contacts that we've got in the football world. So fingers crossed, we'll get a big push on that.
Brilliant. I certainly hope so. The Just Giving page is flying just now. Over £2,000 worth of donations as I'm looking at it on Monday evening. So let's hope some of our lovely listeners can add to that grand total. Ian, thank you very much for your time and for telling us your story. We wish you all the best for your fundraiser and hope all goes well in Malawi. Thank you, boys.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Brilliant. Great to hear from Lee and Ian there from Rothes Juniors. Fantastic initiative. And let's all hope that if you're listening along and have some cash to spare, you can help them out. Head over to their Just Giving page. It's Rothes Juniors FC Malawi fundraiser. Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for. It's been a fantastic episode. And we'll see you all again in 2 weeks' time for episode 19 of the Youth Football Podcast. Myself, Robbie, Kane and Anya, thank you. Bye-bye.